Welcome to a special bonus episode of Game On with Cody and John. In this episode, we present the 2009 Origins Podcasting Panel. The following audio content was recorded on Friday, June 26, 2009, at the Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio. Please send any feedback to the Game On inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com, and be sure to check out our website at www.gameonpodcast.com. Hope you enjoy the seminar.
All right, hi, everyone. I'm Scott Nicholson. I'm taking his place. He really wanted to be here. This was his idea. He pulled this together, but he just had things didn't work out, so he could not make it today. So what we're doing was we're talking about board game podcasting, although a few of these guys skirt and flirt with the other kinds of gamings.
Yeah.
But what we're going to do real briefly is we're going to... Okay, we're podcasters, but we will speak for a while about a few different questions, and then we'll open it up for your hard-hitting questions and such. And if you stick around to the end, we have a drawing. Fun Again Games donated some games, and Beezier Games, Ted Alsbach, gave us some games, so we'll hand those out. If you didn't get a ticket, Brad Keen is giving those out, and so...
By some, you've got an entire stack over there.
It's about almost table height.
We already handed half them out, so there was more.
Ah.
But anyway, it's a neat thing, and so... If we're boring, just think the game. I'm staying for the free game.
I want that
but
game.
If you leave, you get nothing.
Nothing. All right. So what we'll do first is we'll introduce ourselves and our podcast, talk a little bit about what our podcast is about, what maybe our listenership is, and so on and so forth. Okay? So I'll start. I'm Tom Bassel, and this is Eric Sommer. He is the announcer of the show, but he will, starting in August, be my co-host for the Dice Hour. My current co-host, Sam Healy, is in Korea, but he's moving to California, so I kicked him off the show. No, it's just, he'll still be on the show, but in a more limited capacity because of the distance away from me. We're the Dice Tower. We run between 3,000 and 5,000 listeners per podcast. It depends if we have an interesting topic or not. I try to run my show as a variety type show. We have different contributors. Brad has contributed back there, and Jim does my show notes. I try to get people from all over the globe. My goal is a variety show about board and card games.
Short.
I'm Stephen Conway. I'm the co-host and producer of The Spiel. My pal Dave Colson is working at the theater, so he's not here with me today. Our show is, our little tagline is, it's a show about games and the people who love them, and I think that probably describes it as well as anything. It's a segment-based show, so we have sort of divide the show up into different segments. We cover game reviews on a segment called The List, where we do reviews off of our giant unplayed list of games, and we have other segments that feature reviews or looking back at old games like Backshelf Spotlight. And a lot of you probably know this, but that's kind of the format of the show. I guess that's all I need to say.
Okay, I'm Sarah Yerington, and this is my husband, Dan. We own Myriad Games, which is in Salem, New Hampshire. Our podcast is kind of a broad range of things. We have different segments.
It covers a myriad of games, you might say. We specifically theme our podcast, or title them, I guess. We arrange them so that you can look at it immediately and know what it's about. So we'll do like a Session Impressions podcast. Those are kind of our overviews of games. And it'll be like Session Impressions, Arkham Horror. So you know before you even listen to the show what it is. And we put out a bunch of podcasts to try and cover as many games as possible, sticking with our branding kind of. We're relatively new. We just started podcasting in March. We kind of set things up last year. And we've been doing that since. And we got about going on 30 shows up. We do about one a week. So we've got a bunch of interviews coming up from Origins here at the show as well. So those will be coming up. We'll probably have a bunch of bonus podcasts into the summer. Sarah's a teacher, so she has a little more time to edit in the summertime now that she's done with that.
I will be glued to the computer.
So, yeah, tune in if you haven't checked it out. We're a part of the Pulp Gamer Media Network with a bunch of these folks. So you'll get to know all of those. And you can visit us at myriadgames.com, or you can just find us on iTunes as well.
My name is Don Dem. Pulp Gamer Network. You know, we do a variety of podcasts. I produce the Gamma Trade Show seminars, the Out of Character, which is kind of our morning news show banter, which Ron's on, and he'll get a say something about that again. But the Game Kennel, which is collaboratively produced by a whole number of one manufacturer that's part of that now, and a few others, but those are, I think, are the big highlights.
Yep. I'm Ron Blessing, and I do The Game's a Thing with my wife and co-host Veronica Blessing, who's sitting in the audience back there. She's already embarrassed. And our show has primarily become about role-playing games, but we do board games that are of interest to people that are role-players. So we do a lot of the adventure games or anything that would be cool. For instance, we covered we talk a little bit about Formula D because it's got polyhedral dice. It's an easy way to get a role player to play a board game. So I'm also on Pulp Gamer Out of Character and The Game Kennel and Family Night. And
and we also have a new video podcast.
We're actually
Make Their Games video podcast.
Yeah, we're doing I played Glover in one episode of one of the Mayfair White Glove introductions. So anyway, I've been doing it for about 3 years. We have just under 60 shows up. We don't put them out anywhere near as fast as some people, and or most people. And I have to say, the Dice Tower was the very first podcast that I listened to. So. Pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm Cody Jones with Game On with Cody and John. We're about a year-old podcast based out of Indianapolis, and I'll let John do the honors because he talks more than I do anyway. So
I figured that was going to happen. I'm John Richard. I'm the other co-host of Game On with Cody and John. Like you said, we're kind of a younger podcast. We've been broadcasting for a little less than a year now, and we actually were inspired by a lot of the folks on this panel. I actually feel kind of honored to be sitting at this table. But our show is mainly about board games and card games and also some role-playing games. Cody has really more the focus on role-playing games. And we do a segment called The Big Deal that's just sort of a catch-all, might be a discussion, or our next episode, The Big Deal, will of course be Origins. And then we do a review segment called Buy, Try, or Deny, where we'll do a full review of a game. And so we just... our tagline is the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, because Cody and I have very little gamer credibility, and we're just two guys who just, you know, got some sound equipment and said we could probably do this and add our voice to the mix. So we're privileged to be here.
A lot of people always want to know what goes into making up a podcast. I thought it might be interesting if we talked a bit about our production, how much time we put into a podcast, what maybe some general equipment things that we use and such, and you know, because I'm sure everyone here also wants to be a podcaster, and you know, we need more. But basically, what goes into a podcast? You just get on and record and put it on the internet, and 5 minutes later, and we'll start at the. I mean, I guess anyone can jump in here.
You could do that.
I have an obvious an opening thing is because I think there's two different answers for that, and then the biggest answer is start simple. Really, if you're getting into it, don't spend any money, because in 3 to 10 episodes, you might decide that this really isn't what you want to be spending, because it will take a lot of time. So yeah, start simple, start cheap. But anyway.
Yeah, our first rig was 2 Memorex karaoke microphones plugged into a Y adapter into my laptop. That was our very first rig. So we were in it for, you know, $18, and we decided we can't stop at this point. I mean, $18.
And then it's like the other hobbies we enjoy. More toys.
Yeah, but what goes into it now is a mixing board, much like what you're seeing over there, and nicer microphones, much like you're seeing up here, and anywhere from, depending on people breathing and how close they get to the microphone, 3 to 5 minutes per minute you hear. Like that.
It's not as bad as
so.
We jot down that time code.
Yeah, the I know the D6 Generation guys, they couldn't be here, but they're part of the Pulp Gamer Network as well, and they started with literally a Rock Band mic. A USB Rock Band mic, and they just plugged it in. They used Audacity, which is a free program.
Yep.
And that's what we use too to edit. We use an H4 portable recorder.
I still use Audacity, and if you've got a Windows-based computer, don't use the Mac version. But don't use the Mac version of Audacity.
Yes.
But if you have a Windows-based computer, Audacity is still really hard to beat. So free copy of Audacity. A USB headset, if you're doing it by yourself, and then put the mic above your nose. Don't listen to the below your nose people.
Yeah.
Above your nose. And that's it. That's what you need to get started. It's a little more complicated if you have multiple people. But
I think the key is that content is king.
Yeah.
And that if you don't really have anything to say, then it doesn't really matter how good you sound saying nothing. And so you know, Cody and I, we listen to a lot of podcasts before starting ours. Like I said, we're a little later in the game here. So I did go ahead, and these two microphones you see in front of me and Ron, I bought those to start off with. So they're a little higher-end microphone because I'm kind of an audiophile to begin with. But the truth is that if you don't have something to say, then it's really not worth spending any money on at all. So like they said, you know, real cheap microphones. You can get headset stuff that go right into your computer, and that's all it takes. If you got good content, then people will listen.
And Cody and John, I think both of you did it right, because, you know, listening to other shows and figuring out what you wanted to do. Just a few episodes in, I caught one of your earlier episodes, and you were sounding just spot on.
Yeah,
you
know, definitely.
A really good show. So you can go a long ways by just doing a little research and preparation first.
Yep.
And there's also the law of diminishing returns. I mean, you can buy really, really good equipment, and it makes you sound a little bit better, and no one cares. I mean, because a lot of people listening to the podcast are pretty happy with any kind of quality. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't strive to be better, but at the same time, people, again, like I said, are listening to content. You know, what are you talking about?
Trust me, you can spend stupid money.
Yeah.
And it depends a lot on what you're doing, too, because when we first got set up, we were recording in three different locations, and I still wanted that in-studio sound. That required some extra work, and of course, then when you got into interviewing, not everybody has Skype, so you want to do telephone. So I got a telephone component and was recording everything on separate tracks, and that just required a lot more than, you know, keep it home if you can.
And if you're going to do one of the things about our shows, our big niche is that we do a ton of interviews on The Game's a Thing. Save yourself some trouble if you're going to go Skype, which I think is great. If you're going to go with Skype, one little tip, there is an article somewhere on the interwebs, the series of tubes, that actually tells you how to do port forwarding on Skype. And it's getting a little technical, but your Skype experience will be a ton better. We went 2 years before we figured out how to port forward on Skype, which totally changes your sound. So makes it much easier to edit.
Spiel.
My biggest advice, I think, would be to say, when you're getting to the point of actually recording episodes, when you've kind of got all the technical and all the creative things in place, wait 2 or 3 episodes before you even release them, because you'll learn so much by getting the kind of workflow down and the process of doing the show that you may decide, well, maybe that episode one is one that I don't want to release, or maybe you'll have figured it out to the point where you're happy with the workflow and you really have found the structure, the voice that works for your show, that don't feel that you need to. Once you're on that kind of treadmill of releasing, you can build up a backlog so that it gives you time to edit and to not feel like you're on that treadmill where you have to release something every week. It gives you a little bit of cushion to produce episode after episode after episode, because being consistent, I think, with releasing your show is definitely a key to finding an audience, too, as well as actually having something to say.
Yeah, that's really an important point, that you have any, not just gaming podcasts, but any podcast advice that you listen to, they'll always say be consistent. Whether you're once a month, every 2 weeks, once a week, once a day, you know, whatever you're going to do, and there are some daily podcasts out there, you have to be consistent. And that almost requires that you have a backlog of shows if you're doing it at, you know, a weekly basis or more frequently, because there will be things that will come up and you just won't have time to edit. So you've got to have that back there to do. Otherwise, you run into like, oh, well, it was supposed to be every 2 weeks, but now it's every month, and that annoys the listeners. And, you know, we want consistency. And if you are going to have an extended break, just announce that. Like, I listened to some show the other day, and they said, you know, we're going to be busy this summer. We're taking some trips, so we're going to be back in a few weeks. But don't leave your listeners out to dry if they're expecting you to hear you every week and you just don't show up. Like, we started back in August last year, actually getting together our group and playing and recording, and we didn't even launch until March. And that was intentional, because partially because we're so busy during the holiday season, and partially because we knew that we wouldn't have time to do it properly. And then we started with we started with 7 shows launched right off the bat, and then we had a backlog of about 15 shows. They weren't all edited, but they're there so that we know that if we miss a week or miss a couple weeks, we've got that to fall back on. So that's really important, that consistency.
What are you talking about? They're still not edited.
Yeah.
I have quite the backlog right now.
The backlog doesn't always work, though, if what you're talking about is time sensitive.
That's
yes,
true.
That does work for our show because we're doing, like, you know, we're doing a show about Puerto Rico. Well, the show about Puerto Rico is going to be basically the same, you know, in the future. But if you're doing news bits and stuff like that, more of a variety show format, those segments have to be up to date. You could record your, you know, review segments separately, but usually you want it to be like, oh, this is a new game that just came out. I want to cover that. You just have to do it. And that's why most of those types of shows, like the Dice Tower, they tend to be like every couple weeks because you need that amount of time to kind of get all your segments together and that.
It's a lot of logistical issues, yeah. Yeah. Especially with the contributors for Dice Tower. And you know, if one person's late, it kind of delays everything. Or if we don't have the lineup of what we're doing for the show, I can't do the intro. Or if Tom forgets to tell me to do the intro, I don't do the intro. So it cascades. The more delay you get, and then the listeners get upset.
Yeah.
More directly to your question, though, you're talking about, you said something about editing, and I think you're trying to imply that the work that does go into it. You can estimate that editing will be anywhere from a 2-to-1 to a 10-to-1 ratio. And 10-to-1 is when you're interviewing somebody that just really can't talk right, and you really particularly care.
Hey, can I start over?
Right.
Yeah.
But what I meant to say, you can edit this later, right?
Yeah, it'll take me 3 hours to do it, but sure. Yeah.
Once you get good at it, you'll get to a pattern of doing 2-to-1. But I tell you right now, though, the key to sounding good is edit. Mm-hmm. Adam Curry, of course, real famous podcaster a long time ago. He's got like 15 years or 20 years, I don't know how much, or experience, probably much more than that, in broadcasting. He can talk and release. You know, we don't have that, you know, even at our level of expertise.
No, I do.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
I know I edit myself more than I do some other folks on the show. I edit you a lot, too.
Yeah, but, he does edit me a lot.
It does take time, and we make our conversations sound a lot snappier, a lot wittier just by cutting out a little bit of dead space.
Especially if you're going to add any sort of bumpers, you know, music or any sort of effects or anything like that, especially if you've got something like the Dice Tower where you got a bunch of segments that you have to put together. I mean, if you're just sitting down, you're recording a two-hour segment, and you're editing that one segment, that's easier than if I have to add intro music, I have to add outro music, I have to add bumper music in between segments. That all takes, you know, a little more time as you're putting them together.
And there's a huge difference between a structured format of talking about a game from start to finish and doing a show like that, and the type that we do where we have just table talk, where we literally play a game, and then all of the background noise and everything else those ones take me probably 10-to-1 most of the time to go back through and edit, because there's so much stuff that you have to clean up to make it sound like a great 5-minute experience for everybody else who's listening.
Even more so than conversation, a lot of people, myself included, get caught up on background noise. And we get caught up on that background noise, and you try to find these electronic software ways to get rid of those noises. The best thing you can absolutely do is record in a quiet environment. And that means in the summer when it's 105, if you live in Arizona like some of us, that means the air conditioning is off.
Yep.
That means the overhead fan is off. It's just what you deal with. If you get rid of as much background noise as possible before you record, then you're going to go less crazy at the end of that. That said, another free program I recommend if you're, again, going that cheaper route is Levelator.
Mm-hmm. Levelator, even if you're not going the cheaper route.
Yeah, Levelator is brilliant. Basically, some sound engineer geniuses got together and for fun made a program that does all this sound stuff for you. You take your file that's edited, you do a general sound leveling, drop it in the Levelator, and it comes out sounding like you know what you're doing. Trust me.
It's the best program I've gotten for free.
Oh, yeah.
5 years ago, there was one board gaming podcast. It was the Geek Speak or the Dirk and Aldi Show or something of that effect. And then Mark Johnson started up pretty much right on top of them. And then a myriad of other podcasts showed up. So my question is, how has podcasts changed in the past 5 years? And what do we foresee in the future? Are there technological changes and such?
I want Don to answer
that one. Start your homework.
Crickets.
Gosh. Well, the first
remember
thing
that part about Tom not telling us what was going to be in the show?
No, I'll throw in something. The first thing that comes to my mind is just the number of podcasts that are out there now. That's the huge, you know, you brought that up. You always start with one, but now there's dozens, probably well over 100 of each, the board game and the role-playing podcasts. And,
easy. There's whole networks. Yeah. Devoted to
networks.
RPG podcast. There's, you know, Goblin Podcast Network. That's different. All different podcasts. There's, you know, the Pulp Gamer podcast. But they're all different types. So there's a Shadowrun podcast I found out the other day. I don't play a lot of Shadowrun. That's probably why I didn't know about it. But I mean, there's podcasts for everything. So there's like 50 Magic the Gathering podcasts. Most of them are terrible. Yeah. and I think that's what you're seeing is that the market's kind of, it went from like, oh, there's just a couple podcasts, to people are like, what's a podcast? Oh, podcasts exist. And they're like, I can do a podcast. And then you get a little more saturation, and then you have to start choosing. I don't have 100 hours a week to listen to podcasts. What are the best podcasts that I want to listen to on a regular
niche
basis?
Niche is, really becoming
so
important.
So Mark Johnson put a podcast about podcasting out with his Board Games to Go. And one of the things he said back then, when there was only maybe 10 or 12 podcasts, was, make sure that you do something to set yourself apart. Do something different than what's already out there. And now more than ever, with all the podcasts that are out, that's something that you really need to look into doing. Now, there's different styles of podcasting, but frankly, you really need to find whatever your niche is. My niche for me was that I have a retail background. And that niche just got stolen by these guys.
No, we're fine.
I'm kidding. But seriously, I was able to talk about it from a retailer's perspective as well as, an uber geek gamer perspective.
Hey, our niche is that I'm in it too. Females being in the podcast is
right.
Another big deal.
I know
that she's in there too, so we stole everything from you, apparently.
You stole the husband and wife shtick is gone. The retail thing is gone. I mean,
your logo is much better than ours, though.
Thank you.
And they put out shows more often than we do.
Already, yeah. They're already at half our shows or something like that.
We'll compare in total hours.
We're only at like 35. It's fine.
All right, stop fighting.
You are trying to get a feud going, Tom. He's been throwing spiel dice around, throwing tables over. He wants to start some sort of nastiness amongst us. We're all friends, Tom.
Keep thinking that. Anyway, but really, I mean, things have changed. And I personally think there's almost a glut of podcasting going on to some degree. And there's a lot of people come on and do 5 podcasts, and then you never hear from them again. And that's fine. I mean, if they haven't heard from it, but it's difficult because, yes, there are a few people, and some of them are out here who listen to every podcast, who are involved in every podcast. You know, they answer all the contests, answer all the questions, and get involved. But those are a few amongst many. Most people listen to one or two of a certain genre. You know, they might listen to a couple board gaming and news one, but most people don't listen to that many. And so, again, you have to be different than everyone else, or better. And so since being better is more difficult, I would go with different. But there's also things that haven't been explored. This past year, with 2008 and 2009, we've seen the rise of tons of video podcasting. I experimented with it, and I like it enough that I'm going to stick with it for a while. But then we've also seen the rise of Facebook, which is certainly a way to interact with podcasting. Now this Twitter thing is around, and you know, I'm not real fond of it, but is that what the future is? Because you got to stay up on top of all these things, I think. And listeners like when you are involved. They like to be personally involved somehow, and Facebook allows that, and so does these other things.
Yeah, I know Pulp Gamer and Game's a Thing. I don't know if anybody else does, but we have Facebook groups that we set up. And
it takes like 5 minutes if you promote it.
and we've used it to have listeners feed us questions for our interviews. We use it to let people know a show is out. You know, don't just assume because you're on iTunes that everybody's going to go to iTunes and download your podcast, because it's not the way it works. You want to use every avenue possible. And I think that's what's changed. The biggest thing is the number of ways that you can promote your podcast is it's amazing compared to, you know, for me 3 years ago.
Well, let's talk about that. What are the best ways to promote your podcast?
Well, you want to be in iTunes.
You want to be in iTunes first. iTunes is still the number one way to do it.
Podcast 411 has a directory of directories, which I use every time I which seems to be happening every few weeks. I got a new podcast I got to submit to different directories. But that's a good list that I go through and find all the relevant ones. And some of those require a login, some of them don't, but still taking a few hours to do that.
You want to give your listeners ways to interact with you. That's the number one thing. So you have to have email. You have to have some way for them to communicate with you. If you're not going to bother with a forum, we don't bother with a forum. We use Facebook, email, and we get comments under our show notes on the main page.
And I think that's one of the. I'm sorry, Ron.
No, go ahead.
I think that's one of the key things about podcasting that makes it so much fun for both us up here and also for listeners is that it's very interactive. That you can watch a TV show on TV that you like, but there's really no way, for you to be able to easily interact with the people that are on your favorite show. But with podcasting, not only is it easy for listeners to do that, the podcasters themselves, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but we love that. I mean, we just, we kind of thrive off of emails and, and that kind of and comments on our Facebook and those kind of things. So, the easier that you can make that for the listeners to be able to have those points of interaction, the better. That's what makes these conventions so much fun too.
A good example for us was we decided this year we wanted to actually actively try to get into the Ennies for an Ennie Award for the show. And I thought it would be a great way to interact with the listeners. So instead of just us picking some shows to submit, we had our listeners choose our shows. We literally said, send us your top five favorite episodes, and we're going to tally them up and send in what you send us. Because if we're going to get in, we want to get in based on the fact that you're our listeners and you know where we're good and where we're not good. So just interaction is the biggest thing. And Facebook is really helpful. Facebook has been really helpful.
And you'd be surprised how much just that, just an email from a podcast will really swing a fan base, because I've been on both sides of the fence where maybe I emailed into a show I really like and, I listened to it and I kept up with it, but once they emailed me back, it's almost just like I became this fervent fan of it. It's like, oh, they talked to me. They emailed me back. It's fantastic.
You're part of it.
Exactly. And I think we underestimate how much that really swings, that personal touch, that email, that instant message, whatever, really swings it back to the listener has a little ownership in the show, and I think that's a win all around.
Yeah, actually, we have just a real quick story. It's probably been, I think, the most rewarding thing about our show so far is that we had a contest at the end of last year where we were giving away a copy of Battlestar Galactica, the board game. And the contest, basically because we couldn't think of a better thing for the contest. We just said, hey, write us in and tell us why you deserve the game. And so we got a bunch of really great stories, and some were funny and some were kind of touching. And we got an email from a gentleman named Alan, who lives in Illinois, who talked about how he wanted to get a game that was for five or more players because he has four teenage daughters, and that this is a way that he wants to be able to interact with his family. And so, we thought that was really cool, and so we sent him a copy of the game, and then we had a local convention in March, and he actually came and brought all of his daughters to the convention and brought the game with him, and we all played it together. And then we were able to do a little recording afterwards about that, but that was, What?
Don, it's okay.
What happened?
Such a touching story. Games
bringing people together. Okay.
It's getting a little dusty in here.
We're quitting the Pub Gamer Network.
the other thing is become friends with other podcasters.
Yeah.
It's amazing what that does for your listenership when other podcasters are talking about you on their podcast. Also, if you can have another podcast in your town and just show up on their show a bunch, that helps.
How did you have any experience with that, Ron?
No one has ever shown up yet. It's very disappointing.
Nobody showed up in your studio, huh?
But one of the things you mentioned was about the listener feedback, and I say this to people who do listen to shows. I'm good, but I mean, the negative feedback that comes in for podcasts, not so much negative, but saying I wish you would change this or I wish you'd do this, is there. And the positive feedback is there, but the negative is the same as the positive in a sense. And sometimes we forget that there's too many loyal listeners until we come to something like this, and then there's 50, 100 people, they say, oh, we love the show. If you really like a show, tell them, or if you like a specific part of a show. I mean, I get comments that people like it, but if I get a comment that says, you know, oh, you know, that guy who introduces the show, he's so awesome, you know, then I can forward that to Eric, and he has a better day because of that.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, when you spend hours pre-producing, because we didn't actually talk about pre-production yet, about how much time we take to organize some of this stuff. I know you guys, when you're doing an in-depth review on the spiel, I can tell you guys have to do all this stuff, and you spend all this time pre-producing something or editing something and making it funny or entertaining or whatever, and then there's no response whatsoever. You just wonder if it just falls into the abyss. So yeah, that little email just completely makes
keeps,
our day.
Keeps it going, too,
yeah.
when it's like, oh, this is so tedious. But man, if there was somebody just last week send an email, you know, with appreciation, it's like, oh, that's why I'm doing it.
Yeah,
it really helps.
And you get, you know, feedback through a variety of sources, whether you get a review on iTunes or you get a direct email. And it takes 2 seconds. There's a podcast I listen to unrelated to gaming. And at one point they were just like, they mispronounced labyrinthine. And they said, you know, oh, well, you have to email us and say labyrinthine. And I just sent them an email that literally said just a labyrinthine in the subject. And they emailed back and they were like, and this is a relatively big podcast, you know, with I think 20,000 listeners, and they emailed back and they were just like, oh, thanks very much for writing in. And I had a little nice little back and forth conversation with them, and you can tell that they really appreciate that. And I know that we really appreciate that feedback when we get somebody that says, man, I listened to your show and this is what I appreciate about it, or man, I really wish that you would do this about the show. We love that. So if you have comments, let us know.
They talked about you in a later podcast too. They brought that up.
Oh, they did? Okay, that's cool. I haven't listened to that one yet.
The flip side, though, is I think constructive criticism is always welcome, too. You don't want people ripping you all the time. I'm not saying that, but if, you know, people have constructive criticism, I value that just as much as somebody going, wow.
Very much.
We want
very
to
much.
Be better.
And you also are going to have listeners that have, like, different ideas. You'll get an email that says, your podcast is too long. And then the next email will be, your podcast is too short.
The guys of the DC's right? generation get this all the time because their podcast is like 4 hours long, literally, because they do a variety show. But it's like, this one segment is an hour and 15 minutes. We actually did a promo that made fun of that, that they played on the show, which was like a MasterCard thing. And we went through all the different things and the time that it takes for them. And that was, you know, not too horrible humor, priceless after all the different things. And it really is like, because you get people, I'm amazed. I was just like, because personally, I don't like to listen to shows that are that long. And I just kept telling them, man, it's too long. Like, I can't listen. It takes me days to listen to your podcast. and then we get comments because, you know, we have a good relationship with them. And we get comments from people that listen to their show and listen to our show. They're just like, I really wish your show were longer. Because we do, like, oh, we only do an hour long show. And
just put them together.
Yeah, so you gotta balance that out. But that's, I think, where, you know, if you want a 4 hour long show, there are podcasts out there for that. But you can listen to both levels of feedback, because people will tell you both things. They'll tell you it's too short, it's too long, it's too many reviews, it's too few reviews, you have too much conversation, you have too little conversation. So you gotta take everything with a grain of salt. But we love getting all that feedback, so we're never upset to get an email.
I want to bring up one thing, too. Went back to the publicity. Tom, community involvement, I think, is something you should say something about.
Okay. I was going to mention, because you mentioned iTunes and the 411, but since we're being specific here with board games, you cannot deny the power of Board Game Geek.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, it is the focal point of almost every show that we do. I mean, we're constantly referencing it, but if I don't post that I post a show on Board Game Geek, there's a huge drop in listenership. So many listeners have come because of that site, and that is, for us, where the community has grown. You guys do it on your own website, the spiel, but we've done it as one of the guilds at Board Game Geek, and it's amazing. People sit there, they correct us when we make mistakes, they laugh, they tell us our top 10 lists are horrible, and theirs are much better, and it's really fun to get involved.
Tom, you've been corrected on Board Game Geek?
Once or twice.
No. More importantly, on the internet? People talk about things on the internet and they complain about them? Wow. But yeah, if you have your own website, like we have our own website, and the Dice Tower has their own website, like you can have your own website and you can participate in these other things. So like we'll post up, there's a whole spot in the forums for podcasts and blogs on BoardGameGeek. So you can just post there, hey, new show's up, click, and you just pop it there. So that if they don't go to your, if they don't subscribe or they don't go to your page, they can know about that. And you want to get into as many of those networks as you can possibly, you know, as many of those game communities as you can possibly manage you know, your interactions with.
All right. Well, before we open up for questions, is there anything else you guys wanted to mention and talk about?
You should listen to all our shows and subscribe.
Several times.
And leave us a positive review on iTunes for all of them.
Listen early, listen often.
Erase it and download it again.
Yeah. All right. Does anyone here have any questions for anyone or everyone? Yes, sir.
I'm fascinated about podcasting and where it fits into sort of the broader media. You've talked about Board Game Geek, but there's millions of blogs out there. There doesn't seem to be, I mean, magazines seem to be kind of going the way of the dinosaur, but how does all that media fit into sort of gaming? I mean, I'm just interested in your perspective because it kind of feels like a niche to me, and I'm not sure how it all fits in.
Kind of what podcasting does better than other things?
Well,
we actually...
Yeah, maybe something, yeah. I don't know, just riff on that.
Just for the people here, the question is, how does podcasting fit with other media? Is it niche or is it have potential to be more?
How's it
That's
part
the
of
question.
The bigger picture?
And I noticed there's no blogging panel here.
Yeah, no. we actually have a seminar later, I think it's tomorrow, about integrating gaming media into your shopping experience that I'm giving. So if you're interested in how that all interacts, there'll be a lot of the same content that we're talking about today. But when is it? I don't remember.
Oh.
Look in the show book.
It's sometime in the afternoon.
Yeah, sometime
tomorrow.
In the afternoon. I think it's like 2 o'clock or something. But
yeah, that sounds
basically
good.
We actually play podcasts in our store, and you can integrate them into different media sources. So like we're friends with a lot of bloggers. We'll mention them. We actually just added Guilt Free Games, which if you go to I think it's myriadgames.com/guiltfreegames, it'll take you to their stuff. And they just write a blog. They write reviews. They put out like a little PDF newsletter that they print out and stuff. So I think it's you want the audio, the written, and the video all integrated together as much as possible. Ideally, and I'm not sure how that all fits into gaming media specifically for gaming, but I certainly find that I listen to audio podcasts because I can do that. I can listen to them while I'm doing other things. I can't read while I'm processing invoices. I can't, you know, watch a video podcast while I'm driving, or I shouldn't. but I can listen while I'm doing other mundane things. So I think that's where the audio podcasts fit in. Video podcasts, I think we actually use those in store too. We play them on a customer kiosk so people can watch what the games look like. So that's where a lot of that stuff from like Board Games with Scott and the Dice Tower video podcasts come in. So I think that ideally, most podcasts tend to have a blog. Like I know we have ours, myriadgames.com/news, I think it is. And they'll have some posts up there. They'll have a website. And I think it seems like it's developing to the point where it used to be blogs. That was the big thing. Then it was audio podcasts. And now it's developing more into video podcasts. But you're not losing the blogs or the audio, if that makes sense.
The one thing that a lot of people like to get hung up with, especially those that are very passionate about doing it, you know, which would be us up here, it's like podcasts. That's what we do. This is the power of the media. We're going to revolutionize and take over the world. When we're just one wing of media, and any company that's working with media, of course, is going to understand that. Anybody that's looking to get any kind of word out, there's several different ways to do it, and a lot of it just depends on who your listening audience is. It just so happens, though, that in board games, this is kind of a fun observation I made at the Gamma Trade Show here just a couple months ago. We got to talking about Facebook, and I'm surrounded by a whole group of different execs and presidents of different game companies. All of them whip out their iPhone, and start talking about their Facebook ad, just saying that this is a very technologically aware a niche of people. So it does work really, really well inside of the board game industry and in role playing. But it is just one avenue. The track that we do at Gen Con, we've invited bloggers to come participate in that. We've actually got print magazines as a part of that because it's really media and there's so many things you can do about it.
I would say when talking to all the different companies, I would say that at least half of the bigger board game companies still don't take it very seriously, though. And to be fair, that's because it does not bring in the numbers for them. Many podcasts, and even more so blogs, have a really, really small listenership, readership. You know, they want to send out review copies and stuff. They can't send out 500 of them. And so, we sit around like, 2,000 people listen to our podcast. But the podcast still, when I get responses to people buying games or being involved in gaming because of the podcast, my reviews still like 5 times whatever we do in the podcast, because that's a much more specific thing, and that has a much wider viewership or readership. I don't understand it, but The people who listen to podcasts, yes, they tend to buy 600 games as opposed to the people who buy three. But the people who buy three games, there's millions of them, and they don't listen to podcasts. So I still think it's fairly niche.
The other thing, though, about podcasts that I think makes it more useful than some of the other forms of media is, and this is sad, but people don't like to read. A lot of people don't like to read, or they don't have time to read. And people have become, Hulu proves that people don't want to wait to watch something for when it's on. They want to watch it when they want to watch it. Well, the same is true with podcasts. It allows you to do that.
We are on demand.
We are on demand. And that's a big deal. Specifically in the realm of board game reviews, people don't have time to, or the money to buy all the board games and figure out whether or not they like them. And they don't want to read some of the reviews. Some of the reviews, the written ones, can be pretty lengthy. And just saying. But seriously. So, you know, tell me what I need to know about this so I can make a decision. And that's what's helpful about podcasting. And it is niche, but it definitely serves a relatively powerful function.
The spoken word, though, does have a lot of power. When you're reading text, you don't necessarily get the inflection and the passion,
right,
you know, that comes across. So there's a benefit there, too.
And there's something that ties into how different people process information as well, which Sarah is familiar with. She does a lot with the different multiple intelligences about how people learn better. Like, I learn things better by reading them, but I'm in a minority. Most people do better by actually doing things or, you know, orally hearing something by listening to it, orally with an AU. And that or by seeing it in a video podcast. So you can, and that's why we've all had this experience. It's easier to just pick up a game and play the game if somebody's teaching it to you in person than it is to read through the rule book and learn all the rules and internalize them mentally and then regurgitate them while you're playing. You have to appeal to those different people, and I think that we are getting more to the point where, and I think this is why the reviews, getting to Tom's point, if I want details on, I want a review on Space Alert, let's say, and I find a written review on Space Alert, I can read that in 5 minutes. I can listen to a segment on Space Alert in 20 minutes.
That's episode 22 of Game On with
Cody. There you go. if there's a podcast that's, you know, a couple hours long or even an hour long and it has something about Space Alert in it, well, all I'm interested in is Space Alert, and I don't want to figure out what time in the podcast Space Alert's in there. That's actually why we format our shows the way we do, so that if you wanted to listen to a bunch of them all together, you could. But if you're just like, I just want to know about Space Alert, you just go to Session Impressions, Space Alert, which should be launching soon, right after theirs.
Okay, that was about 10 minutes on one question.
Yes, sir.
About sponsors, how feasible is it to run one without them, and what's the tipping point where you realize I'm not going to be able to keep doing this without listener support or some kind of sponsorship, and how do you go about getting them?
Okay, as far as feasibility for how to run them without sponsors, well, we've been doing it for 3 years. We have no sponsors. I have a tip jar on the site, and actually that's paid for a lot of it. But that said, depending on the bandwidth you choose for your podcast, I choose to go with 64 kilobits per second mono because I don't think just spoken word needs stereo. That's just my opinion. Everybody else here, or almost everybody else here, goes with a higher bit rate, and they go stereo. But, you know, if you go to a service like Libsyn, it's $5 a month for 100 megabytes. And if you do, it's like at 64 kbps, it's like 4 hours or something like that you can do for 100 megabytes.
Yeah, you could even put some music in there.
So for $5 a month, your outlay is $60 a year. If you decide to have your own domain name, you go to Namecheap.com and get it for $8.88 or something like that. So you're talking $70 a year without sponsors.
Plus equipment.
But then again,
USB mic.
That depends. You can get a $12 USB mic and get some decent sound out of it, depending on what your environment is.
But you're missing other costs, the games themselves.
Absolutely.
But seriously, if you want to listen to the podcast, you want them to know about all the games, and so they need to be able to get these games somehow.
Right.
I mean, they might be able to have companies send them to them for free, but that doesn't happen as often as people think it does.
No,
or
it
you
doesn't.
Can just be a store yourself, and that helps.
Yeah, I mean, essentially,
that's cheating.
Yeah. We spend a lot of money to be a store. We're sponsored by, we always say we're sponsored by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly local game stores everywhere. And because we design our content to be able to be played in any store or for anybody to be able to go. Because the point is not that we want you to buy all your games from Myriad Games. If you're a local to us, that's great. Or if you don't have your local store, that's fine. But we want you to just learn about games and buy them and enjoy them. That's what we want you to do. So we kind of use that because we're paying for these games and we use them for demo purposes in store, we kind of self-sponsor. But I know you certainly can. If you get a larger listenership, like the D6 Generation gets a lot of different sponsors. They actually do auctions as well. They do they sell shout-outs on the show on eBay, so you can bid for them, and then you can shout out for your game club or whatever, and they've had a lot of success with that. I know the Dice Tower's done sponsorships, and obviously the Pulp Gamer's done that as well for various shows. But you need to have something of value that you're providing.
Yep.
And usually the amount that you're going to get from that is not huge, but it does help offset a lot of the costs, especially if you're going to do contests. If you're giving away, you know, copies of games, and that's what a lot of reviewers do. Hey, game company B, if you send me a copy of your game, I will play it, I'll review it on the show, and then I'll give it away. So that way you know that they're not, I don't just want the games for me. You know, I'm gonna share that, and I'm going to help promote your game. And if you have a good listenership and you have, you know, professional presentation, then usually you can get some kind of, but that itself takes time. So then you got to weigh, like, is it worth me going around and chasing all the different companies to try and track down review copies?
No, it's a lot of work.
Yeah. The games do cost money, and I agree with that. But at the same time, I have an illness that, you know, for me, I've always looked at it as, I'd be buying these things anyway,
right.
You know, the bulk of them. I also, I don't own a store, but I manage a store, so the 40% discount helps. So my company sponsors me, and they don't even know it. But yeah.
Well, if you want a sponsorship, work or own a game store.
Open a game store. Yeah. There you go. It's a very cheap way to launch it.
Seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Our experience with sponsors maybe, I guess, a little different in that we reached, I guess, a tipping point where I've actually never sought out sponsorship. They've always sought me out. They contacted us and said, hey, we suddenly saw a jump in sales, you know, because of a review you did, and we, you know, tracked it back and saw it was because of a link from the show. Could we sponsor or, you know, with the Chessex Dice or things like that, that they've a lot of times come to us. And that was a revelation to us. Wow, people are actually listening enough that they actually want to advertise on the show. So there is a path that can go that way. I mean,
it's always fun, even outside of sponsors, when people you find out who's listening.
I got an email a while back from like one of the top developers for the Nintendo Wii version of Metroid. That's a fan of my show. I'm like, dude, I play your game. Your game's awesome, you know. And I get an email from this guy made Metroid, that kind of thing. So you never know who your listeners are. So that's always fun to figure that out.
Which also means be careful what you say.
Yeah.
There's sort of corollary to that question.
I quickly deleted the New Metroid Sucks episode before. I'm just kidding.
I think the corollary question, though, with sponsorship is, to us, it raised the whole question of where's that firewall between content and sponsorship and how to navigate that line and decide, you know, what kind of show you're going to be, or, you know, you don't want to be accused of being just a shill for the sponsor and trying to figure out a way to, you know, be appreciative of the sponsorship, but also have your own voice, and that's certainly a legitimate concern, I think.
I mean, yeah, computer magazines, I know they deal with that all the time, but they still manage to do it. You know, you'll see the full page spread, turn the page, and, you know, they get 13% on the review. But, I mean, that is hard. The easiest sponsors are the ones who are game stores themselves, because that's easy to promote them, or something that's not necessarily a specific game company, or a game company that's so big that you like enough of their games that they won't be so upset when you trash one every once in a while.
And
it is hard.
A lot of times you can give them a kind of professional consideration where, like, our kind of mode is that we play a lot of games, and we say this on the show, we play a lot of games we are not going to review, because I would rather not – I'm not going to spend 4 hours recording and editing a podcast for a game I don't like.
That's what I was just thinking.
And so you can kind of, like, if you don't hear about it, you might know it's not good. So we're mostly going to spend our time – on ones that we like. And it doesn't mean that every review we do is totally glowing. It just means that if we don't have anything good to say about it, it's standard politeness. It's, you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all.
Whoops.
Especially when you're doing a whole show like we are about a given game. If it's just like a passing reference about, like, man, I played Quest Cards and I didn't like it or something, then that's fine. But if it's just like, oh, well, I'm gonna take 25 minutes and tell you about why I hate this game, that doesn't help anybody.
Right. You're
not helping anybody find a game that they're going to enjoy unless they want to go, you know, complain about it. So we kind of come at it from a positive standpoint, and we get a lot of sponsors that they send us games, and we review them, and we just tell them directly. We email them. We say, look, we're going to cover this game and this game. We like them. We're not going to cover the rest of them because we didn't like them. And they appreciate that. And so if you don't hear something about, you know, it's just us being polite to our sponsors. And I think that's a good way for us to handle it, at least.
We kind of fall in a different boat in that we produce for some companies. So, you know, that's where it's been kind of an interesting challenge for us, because it has been confusing to some people, I think. So we have different shows that do different things.
Do we have any other? Yes, sir.
I know this is about board game podcast, but I wanted to ask about cross-genre coverage. I mean, some of you do cover different types of games, role-playing games, card games, maybe collectible games. Do you find that works well, or does that discourage listeners who might only be interested in one or the other?
We tied it in the way I said earlier. We started out as a board game podcast because when I first started, I wanted to have a show like The Dice Tower or Board Games to Go. Those were the two that I first started listening to. And then I started listening to Pulp Gamer, and I was like, oh, my God, I have to have sound like that. And then I saw what it cost, and I said, I don't have to have sound like that. Although I've come pretty close for much less money. But what we ended up with, our final thing, I got to review one of my idols in role-playing. He wrote my favorite setting, Shane Hensley. And I got to review him, and that's why you're going to hear Savage Worlds come out of my mouth. But I got to review him. Shut up. I got to interview him, and all of a sudden my listenership shot up. And I said, huh. And it wasn't that it was just Shane, although I still get hits for him. It was that people liked the banter that we had when we interviewed somebody. So I was like, well, I still want to do board games. But my wife joined the show, not a huge board game person. So how do I do this? So I need to find games that are going to appeal to my wife to review as well, because I still want to bring board games into the show. So we said, all right, if it's going to appeal to a role player, maybe it'll appeal to Veronica. And so that became our niche, role-playing games and board games that
have polyhedral dice.
Well, not in the case of Formula D. But yeah, so that's how we do it. And that actually, since we went to that concept, has worked really well. And we've actually created some cross-genre players now because of that.
Yeah, we found, we've only done a few episodes with a kind of role-playing game focus, and I think it's just been kind of so far as the results. I think what we're doing now is maybe mentioning things in news or a brief review. Hey, the new Eberron guide came out for D&D, you know, go take a look. And that's about it, because I think when we did a full episode, we had some people say, you know, that's okay and all, but I prefer when you do board games. But I don't think they mind if it's like kind of like a 1 out of 10, at least for our listeners. But,
you should try to find role-playing games that are going to be of interest to board gamers.
But then more people are going to steal your stuff.
I said D&D.
I think it's important that we... I mean, some people can cross over, and that's well and good, but there's a lot of people who do not... I mean, for example, Board Game Geek is turning into RPG Geek, or they're combining those right now, and there's hundreds and thousands of people who are like, huh, I don't care. They just want board games. Board games is already hard enough not to cover all them.
Right.
To try and add more means... My knowledge is diluted, personally. I mean, most of the people who do cross, they do role-playing games and board games, they know a whole lot less about board games than those of us who concentrate just on board games.
And
I know a whole lot less than the guys who do the HeroScape podcast about HeroScape, because that's all they do. The more specialized you are, the better you know the subject.
That's why you get two people, though.
Yeah, well, and that's...
I have 10, and we still can't do it.
That's true. But I think that... you know, the perspective we've come from is that we're just normal guys who play a lot of different kinds of games, and we've found that just the majority of people that we talk to and that we're friends with aren't this unilateral kind of gamer, you know, like and I'm not sure if that's the case for people who listen to our show, but you know, folks who are interested in Euro-style board games sometimes are also interested in American-style board games, and sometimes are interested in RPGs, sometimes they're interested in collectible this and that, or they would at least be open to the idea of learning about something like that. I mean, just from listening to the D6 generation, I've never been a miniature war gamer, but it's something that, you know, I would consider doing because of that. So broadening horizons like that and kind of creating the well-rounded gamer, I guess, I think is also something to strive for. But Tom, I do agree with you that it does sort of dilute your knowledge if you have expertise in one area.
Well, and ours being the way that we put ours out, I mean, we obviously title ours, so you can just skip over one if it's not going to fit what you want to listen
D&D
to.
D&D 4th edition, delete. And yeah, so that was one thing that we intentionally took in mind. Because then we can cover all games, and if you don't want to listen to one, you just delete it. You know, it's no big deal.
And being a story, you kind of have to know something about everything, so we do have to dilute our knowledge slightly.
That's how, that's how I tend to keep my knowledge up, too, is running the store. That's the, I mean, I tell people I read rule books for a living, whether they're role-playing books or board game books. I read a lot of them. If I just want to talk to my customers...
We gotta pull this to a close, and I mean, but I mean, for those of you who didn't get questions, people can stick around and answer those questions,
definitely.
Or go out to lunch and answer questions and such. Because really, I mean, we're podcasters; we could stay up here for hours
and
hours.
We could talk forever.
And some of you are waiting for the games, and or you just want to leave, but you don't want to look rude or such. So we really do need to wrap this up.
Sure.
But I want to thank everyone who came for this, and thank Scott. Scott really put all this together and
got it all
with Origins.
Thanks,
so go watch
God.
His podcast, and video podcast. He's still the pioneer there, and really, he's almost a conscious of podcasting. We have some groups behind the scenes, and he's always talking about why aren't we doing this? What's your mission statement? You know, type things. So thank you guys for coming. What we're going to do now is we're going to draw these and hand out these games.
We hope you enjoyed this special bonus episode of Game On with Cody and John. Game On with Cody and John is a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network. Check us out at www.pulpgamer.com. And until next time, game on.